So they came home because they couldn't really do much there anyway. But and then they didn't keep her in Sydney very, very long. They sent her back here, and they sent her home. And so my friend is not working at the moment because she's not very well, but she spent the week cleaning this girl's house, cleaning her daughter's house. She was like an episode of Hoarders. She showed me the photos. There was mess everywhere. It took them all week to clean it. So she's jumped out of the car. She's had to deal with the police. So my friends had to deal with the police because she jumped out of the car. Then she sent them away and she's still turned around. So she spent the week too organising the medication and making sure all that sort of stuff. So she was supposed to be – she was sent home from the hospital with heparin, which means she had to inject herself, which she couldn't do. So my friends had to go – anyway, they sorted that out. She shouldn't have been sent home with heparin, but anyway, that's a whole other story. But and then spent hours and hours and hours trying to sort her out. And probably next week, the daughter's going to turn around next week and go get nicked, basically. And I think so. My friend's not a Christian, but I think what an example to all of us about how to love, because we don't get a choice, really. That's how we're supposed to love. And I just go, I don't know that I could do that. I don't know I could do what she's done, because this is really the end, like the journey to there has been huge, and there's been thing after thing after thing. And my friend's actually not the mother, she's the stepmother. So, yeah, I think she's done just amazing. And, I can't do much. Do I just say to her, you know, you've been amazing, and one day hopefully she'll appreciate it, because – that's all you can say. But that's how we've got to love, you know, that total unselfishness. And so, oh, careful. You know, I wonder how many of us have said to people, I've told you so. Oh, I've moved. Did I move that or did it? Anyway, it doesn't really matter. How many of us go to people, I told you so? Yes. We do, don't we? I know I do, and I shouldn't do it, but I do. And even when I don't say it, I think it, which is just as bad. But anyway, you know, at school, you know, you get kids and sometimes you don't suspend them because you just know that they're going to go ahead and drop themselves in it in a week later anyway. So, you know, it's like you're expecting them. I was thinking about it coming over this morning. It's like expecting them to do the wrong thing, which is not a good place to be. And so, you know, struggling with what do we do when people do the wrong thing? And, you know, do we nag them? Do we try and make them feel guilty? Do we say, I told you so? You know, do we gossip? Do we feel better than they are because we haven't done those wrong things? You know, do we try and tell them what they should be doing? You know, or threaten them with what we will do if they don't do the right thing? You know, do we confront them in love and expect them to do the right thing and then feel betrayed when they don't? And there are different ways it tells us in the Bible to deal with people who do the wrong thing. So 1 Timothy 5 verse 20 says, those who sin should be reprimanded in front of the whole church. This will serve as a strong warning to others. And Matthew 18, 15 to 17 says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their faults just between the two of them. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others so that every matter might be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, teach them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. So those are biblical things and they have their place. And I'm not saying that we don't ever do those things, but I think sometimes we jump to those things too quickly. So I thought, let's have a look at what Jesus did when he was betrayed and what we can learn from that. I mean, I don't think it gets much worse than betraying Jesus, you know, not once, but three times. It's pretty, you know. So if we want to go to Luke chapter 22. So Luke 22, I'm just going to read 31 to 34 to start with. So this is at the Last Supper. Okay, Jesus and his disciples are sitting around. They've just shared communion and they're just talking. And this is what Jesus says to Peter. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat, But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. But he replied, Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death. Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows, you will deny three times that you know me. So Peter doesn't even want to entertain that notion that he's going to betray Jesus. Okay. He talks himself up big, you know. I'm going to die. I'm ready to die for you. So, of course, I'm going to tell people that I know you. But, you know, he's convinced he's strong enough. And isn't that the way with all of us sometimes? We think we're strong enough to not fall into temptation. But just as Peter did, we do. And Jesus knew. Jesus knew that Peter was going to sin, and he knows that we're going to sin. But he doesn't carry on at Peter going, you better not do that to me. You better not deny me. You better not. La, la, la. If you do that, this is going to happen. He prays for him and he commits him to the Father. You know, and Jesus is like that with us too. He already knows we're going to do the wrong thing and he's in heaven praying for us. You know, he's not sitting there thinking, oh, Rosina's going to do that wrong today and that means I can give her a really hard time, make her feel guilty. No, he's praying that my faith will not fail me and that I'll turn back and do the job that he's called me to, you know. And I think Jesus prayed for Peter's faith not to fail him, even though he knew that it would. So I think that's a, you know, not even Jesus gets yes to all of his prayers, you know. So that was just a side thought I thought when I was reading this. So if we go on down to 39 to 46, Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you shall not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them and knelt and prayed, Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him, and being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. Why are you sleeping? He asked them. Go and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. While he was speaking, a crowd came up, and the man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus asked him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, Lord, should we strike with our swords? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, no more of this. And he touched the man's ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard and the elders who had come for him, am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs? Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me. But this is your hour when darkness reigns. Then seizing him, they led him away and took him to the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance. But when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, this man was with him. But he denied it. Woman, I don't know him, he said. A little later, someone else saw him and said, you are one of them. Man, I am not, Peter replied. About an hour later, another asserted, certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. Peter replied, man, I don't know what you're talking about. Just as he was speaking, the cock crowed. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the words the Lord had spoken to him. Before the cock crows today, you will deny me three times, and went outside and wept bitterly. So Jesus knows he's about to die and he's going to be betrayed by his best friends. He knows that they're going to run away and that none of them are going to be there when he's crucified. But again, he doesn't give them a hard time about it. He just accepts that and tells them to pray that they don't fall into temptation. You know, in other accounts, Jesus tells them that the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And, you know, we need to recognize that in ourselves and in others, that while we want to do the right thing, sometimes we're not strong enough. And because nobody is. Nobody's strong enough except for Jesus to do the right thing all the time. It's not possible. But Jesus then prays for Peter that he'll strengthen his brothers. He will know what weakness is, and it will allow him to strengthen others. So we need to do that too. We need to let God use our weaknesses to help make others strong and not to give them a hard time when they do the wrong thing. Now, as I said, Jesus knows that they're going to fall in temptation, but he doesn't keep on at them. You know, denying Jesus three times is pretty bad. How much worse is it going to get? But Jesus, again, he doesn't speak in anger. He doesn't speak, rejection. Again, he tells them to pray. He wants them not to sin, but he knows that they will, because he knows they're not perfect and he knows we're not perfect. He doesn't make a huge deal of it, but he continues to pray. See, praying is the key, I really think, is we have to pray for ourselves. We have to pray for each other. You know, it's easy to give, particularly if people have betrayed us. You know, I can't imagine thinking that my child's going to throw themselves out of the car that I'm driving. Like, that's just, you know, it's, well, I couldn't believe it really when somebody told me. But God knows that we do those things to God all the time, that we betray him. You know, it's our sins that sent him to that cross. You know, sometimes I think too, we want people to do the wrong thing so we can feel good and go, I told you so. That told you so is such a, makes us feel good for a little bit. Okay. But if we want to act like Jesus, we have to pray for people. Pray that they don't sin. Pray that they'll withstand temptation and be worried about the effect that sin has on them rather than the effect that it has on us. You know? So my friend's not really concerned about herself and what that's done for her. She's worried about a daughter and, you know, how she's on all this medication and it's not good. There's been a brain injury. So she's worried about her and not the effect that it's having on her. And I think that's what Jesus does for all of us, you know. You know, that betrayal of Jesus, it wasn't secret. Everybody knew. Jesus had predicted it. He's done it in front of everybody. And again, Jesus, though, doesn't stop trusting Peter. He doesn't say to him, oh, I've called you to be the rock of my church, but you're not good enough for that anymore. No, he doesn't choose somebody else. That was Peter's job, and it was still going to be Peter's job. So he prayed that when his faith, he knew his faith was going to fail him, that he would turn back and strengthen his brothers. If John 21:15-19, after Jesus has risen, Jesus says to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked for the third time, do you love me? He said, you know all things, you know I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself in what and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. So Jesus doesn't ever mention to Peter that he's betrayed him. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, oh, you're going to have to do this to make up for it or whatever. He doesn't cut Peter off and refuse to speak to him. You know, I see a lot of that in families at school, dealing with parents who don't want to deal with their kids because they don't like what their kids have done. And it's horrible. But that's not the way it should be, you know. But Jesus there commissions Peter to take care of the people who will love Jesus. And he accepts that Peter, despite that betrayal, loves him more than everybody else. So, you know, sometimes the people who love us will hurt us the most. And that's, you know, if you don't love somebody, they're not really going to hurt you. It's that accepting that people who love you are going to hurt you. And as I said, the way Jesus responded and the way my friend responded, not the way that I respond when people sin, I hate to say. I don't know about you, but I'm not always that loving. It'd be nice to think that I am and I'm working towards that. But that's the way Jesus is. So that's the way that we should try and be. You know, if somebody betrays us, then, you know, in Romans 8:28 it says, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And all things means those sin things as well, my sin and other people's sin. You know, I often wonder what would happen if Judas hadn't betrayed Jesus. You know, what would happen if Peter hadn't denied Jesus? You know, maybe if he hadn't have denied Jesus, he would have been killed along with him. And then all those things that wouldn't happen. I don't know. But sometimes, and not also, all things God uses for good. So, you know, Jesus went on it, not Jesus, Peter went on at Pentecost to give that message and 3,000 people came to the Lord in one day. You know, Jesus loves and is praying for us not to fall into temptation, but he's also praying that when we do, that we will come back and fulfill the message that he had for us. And we need to grasp hold of that truth and not beat ourselves up too. But we need to extend that grace and mercy to others in our life so that, you know, that in 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonour others. It is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. It does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And that's the way Jesus loved, and that's the way we need to work at loving. No, Jesus turned Peter's betrayal into a chance to commission him to take the good news to others and to build the church. So we need to do those similar things to help others use their sins into an opportunity to serve God, because that's what God's doing for us. So we can't do anything less for others than God does for us.